What would it mean to you to create a life you love? My mission through Quiet the Hive is to ensure that the women I work with get to the end of days thinking, holy cow, what a ride, rather than if only I'd been brave enough to, or I wish I'd had the strength to. And so that's what we take further here on From Inside the Hive podcast, and I'm so glad you're here. Every other week, you'll hear my own musings, things that I hope will inspire, challenge you, give you things to try out and things to channel. And those alternate weeks, I have an amazing guest who's going to share with you the story of their brave choice or something that can inspire you, along with hints and tips for how you can think about creating a life you love. If you want more of this outside of the podcast, then why not sign up for The Compass, my four-week self-guided online course helping you reconnect with you. Head to quietthehive.thinkific.com. Or perhaps you'd like to take it further and get some one-to-one coaching with me, an award-winning mindset coach. I'd be delighted to spend time helping you create a life you love. Okay, on with the show. Oh my goodness, I have got such a great episode for you today. I hope that you fall in love with Gabrielle Trainor as much as I did. This was the first time we'd met, and I think she's wonderful. The connection is just so fabulous. She is the author of the incredible 1% Wellness Experiment, which we'll tell you all about. She's also a calm coach and author and the podcast host of the Pressing Pause podcast. I cannot wait to introduce you to her. I hope that you love this conversation as much as I loved having it. Okay, without further ado, here it comes. Hello, hello, and welcome to From Inside the Hive with me, Jane Galloway from Quiet the Hive. I am so excited to be joined by a wonderful guest this morning. And the funny thing was, I actually was flicking through the Red magazine in bed one morning when her name popped into my consciousness, because the next thing I knew, you will know if you listen to me quite regularly, you'll know that I'm a real big fan of Lucy Werner, who is a PR expert and an incredibly generous person as well. And she opened the opportunity for people to say, here's a platform I have, and the sorts of people I'm looking for, and for other people to say, I would like a platform to go and speak on because I need some PR for something. And lo and behold, who was in that messaging stream but the lovely Gabrielle Trainor, who I had been reading about that very morning, and her incredible book, The 1% Wellness Experiment. So Gabrielle, without further ado, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning. I'm very well, especially after that lovely intro. Thank you.
No, you're welcome. And actually, it's been really lovely 10 minutes just kind of hanging out together and getting to know each other a little bit. We've got quite a bit in common in terms of our approach, our ethos, and I was so excited to read more about your book. Before we get into that, I wonder if you can tell us a little bit about who you are and what lights you up.
Yeah, so my name is Gabrielle Trainor, and I live in the Brecon Beacons in South Wales with my husband and my little dog. Mm-hmm. And I'm a coach and a writer and now an author, which does not get old saying that. I teach online courses, I coach one-to-one, I also work with my local mental health charity. And what lights me up? Oh, well, if we're talking about kind of like what excites me and energizes me, mm-hmm. Then I'm very keen on having quite a loud sing and dance along to a cheesy 80s pop tune.
Oh, I love it.
And actually,
that.
Wednesday mornings, you can quite often find a little story on Instagram of me when I parked up in my local town before I go to work in mental health charity, having a little sing along and dance along to a pop tune.
My younger self
would be mortified, but 48-year-old me thinks it's hilarious and doesn't mind that I'm a complete idiot doing it.
No.
So that certainly lights me up. Sharing a meal with friends, laughing over food with friends, that lights me up. Going for walks in the beautiful countryside where I live, those things light me up. If it's kind of what in general sort of makes me feel good, all of those things, but also quieter things, mm-hmm. like reading, losing myself in a book, having really kind of deep conversations. I'm an introvert, so I, you know, I'm not really a small talk person. I'm a let's get into the heart of things, let's talk about real stuff kind of person. And also because I'm a writer, having an idea of something I want to share and then it coming out of my brain through my fingertips onto the keyboard exactly as I want it to, that is an amazing feeling, because sometimes it's quite hard to translate what's in your head to the written form. So when that works, that lights me up for sure.
Oh my gosh. Gabrielle, I thought I loved you before and I love you even more now. So 80s tunes, so down for you for that. Absolutely amazing. I love this question about what lights you up. And it's one I try and ask rather than what do you do? Because we in society, we talk so much about what we do and it becomes part of our identity. And for a lot of people who are working Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, of course it's part of your identity. It's a massive part of who you are and what you do. But I love that thing about what lights you up. And some people do go down the, well, what lights me up is my work and here's what I do for work. And some people do go through the, and here's what makes me, you know, fulfilled and happy in life. And I love that blend that you have. And I love that you answered it from the point of view of literally what lights you up, because that just lights me up as well. So thank you for sharing those. It's amazing. And of course, you're not just an author and a coach, but you are a podcast host. So you have your own podcast, which is always slightly nerve-wracking getting people on who have their own podcast, because I always assume they're much more professional than I am. But the Pressing Pause podcast is a wonderful title. And I know that you, forgive me if I get this wrong, tell me if I have, but you call yourself a calm coach, right? And that speaks to some of that stuff around the love to sit down and read a book and get in depth. And there's your offerings on your website are incredibly generous, so that you've got those wonderful freebies for people around starting your day calm. You've got guided meditations, there's an ebook on there, there's how to create your own self-care package, which I love. So tell me more about where that's come from in terms of that introverted, I guess, as you mentioned, but that calm side and that real sort of pressing pause place. How did that all come about?
Yeah, it's quite interesting, actually, because it wasn't something I was entirely aware of. I knew, well, when I read Quiet by Susan Cain, good Lord, that was a revelation.
Yeah,
I read that in my probably mid-30s, and suddenly I understood myself and all the things that I thought that I was, you know, I was just being a bit pathetic. I was a bit weak. I needed to get stronger. Maybe, you know, I needed more vitamins, and that's why I didn't have any staying power when I went out shopping for the day and actually after 2 hours wanted to give up and go home. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't understand why did I not want to be around people all the time when actually a lot of extended family and in-laws and friends were fine with it. I read that book and I understood how important quiet time, how being calm is something that absolutely feeds my soul and recharges my battery and allows me to do all the things I want to do, be around people, be the person I want to be around people.
Yeah.
And so that really sort of helped me to understand and accept myself a lot more. So I will forever be grateful to Susan Cain. And then it's interesting, I started the podcast in 2018. So it's pretty much 6 years old now.
Wow.
And I started it thinking, I'm just going to do really short episodes, because much as I love really long episodes, sometimes there's only so much time, you know, that you can have. And I thought, I'm just going to make it really bite-sized. And I wanted to call it Pressing Pause because I just wanted people to have a little breather where maybe for 10 minutes, and I realized now, you know, this whole kind of 10 minutes, which we'll probably come onto with the book, has been around in my life for years. And so I just thought, well, let's just, you know, just give people an opportunity to just press pause on their life, just to stop for a second. Maybe, you know, they can get something helpful from me for 10 minutes and then get back onto busy life. But just to take a breather, just, you know, some kind of excuse / invitation / permission slip to do that. And then the feedback I got really quickly from the podcast wasn't just that people liked what I was sharing, but that they said how calming it was to listen to, that my voice was really calming. Yeah. This was a revelation to me. I was like, really? Okay, nobody has ever said in their life to me that I have a calming voice or that listening to me is calming. And this was the strongest feedback I was getting.
Wow.
And so I can't remember whether that came first or whether I started recording my courses, but I think I recorded my courses initially because I thought, let's make it as accessible as possible. Sure. You know, it might be that it's not easy to read, not able to read. Actually, you know, the women I work with are very busy people. The idea of sitting and reading might not feel doable, but they can listen while they're making dinner, while they're driving to work, whatever. And again, I was getting the feedback that a lot of people liked listening, not because necessarily they weren't able to read it or didn't have the time to read it, but because they just wanted to hear me talk to them. So I thought, okay, this is interesting. And then I just, different places I'd get feedback from where people say, no, just being around you, I just feel calmer. And it was funny because I was like, I don't know what I'm doing to be calm around people or to be giving out this vibe, but it just seems to be this vibe that I'm giving out. Okay, nice. And then I started to really sort of pay attention to actually what have I done in my life to help me feel calm. And I realized that my first career that was in publishing, you know, it was children's publishing, but it's still very go. It was magazines and it was newspapers. So monthly magazines, fortnightly magazines, weekly newspaper, very kind of, you know, high energy, fast paced, a lot happening, all quite stressful and quite frenetic, which I could keep up with for a while in my 20s. My 30s, everything started to creak around the edges because I just found it incredibly stressful. Plus kind of the topic of news, watching the news all day, every day was for, you know, to be able to write about newspapers, quite stressful. Not at all calming. And so then I made changes because I thought that actually, if I don't work in that environment, if I don't live in a center of the capital city, that will help me feel calmer. And it did to an extent, but actually it's also was working on myself and bringing in techniques I was learning from positive psychology, things like mindfulness and compassion and gratitude, and how that actually really helped to ground me, bring me out of my head where I was just thinking all the time and just really sort of like place me in the present. That helped me feel calm. So I realized all these different things that I had been doing, how I'd been shaping my life in my work, where I lived, how I was relating to people, you know, kind of learning about boundaries and how, you know, they're not big, scary, horrible walls to shut people out, but actually is to help you relate better to people and people to understand you and, you know, all of these things I was doing was helping me to feel calm, as well as me sort of giving out this apparently natural calm vibe that I apparently have. So it all kind of beautifully kind of worked together where I thought, well, this is kind of what I do. This is how I can be of most service to people, is to help people to tap into the calm that they want within themselves, and not just kind of what they can do in terms of their own practices to be calm, but also how they can relate to other people and how they can set up their relationships and how they go about their days so that they can feel the calm that they want when they want it. And it, you know, and calm isn't just about being super relaxed and kind of horizontal and chilled out and laid back, but actually it's being grounded and it's being, you know, clear about your values, what's important to you, living in accordance with your values. You know, being calm allows you to actually be very, you know, kind of activist if you want to. You know, it allows you to speak up for other people. It allows you to really stand up for what is important to you. It's not a passive thing. And therefore the power of calm is actually huge. And realizing that made me just really want to help people to tap into that calm and from all the good things that can come from it. You see that I've just rambled for ages about calm because I get very excited about it.
No, it comes across clear in a very calm way. It does come across really strongly how passionate you are about this. And I love, so I'm gonna read a little bit. So I've got the red article next to me in which I first came across you. I love the quote that they've used from you here, which is, "Nothing is going to make your life super shiny, perfect, and easy breezy. No one's life is like that. That's simply not the human experience." And that really sung to me before I met you, you know, when I read this article, because it's so true. There's so much promise online of do this and it'll solve everything, do this and your life will be brilliant, and it's not. It's little pockets of little things like gratitude practice, like meditation or mindfulness, like going out for a walk, or I mean, moving to the Brackens is a big one, isn't it? But being able to immerse yourself in the nature that is in the Bracken Beacons, I mean, that's just fantastic. It's little things that make a difference. And I guess that must be where your book came from. And I love how you've sort of explained the story of how that was woven into your life without you really realizing it. And sometimes it is, and you tell me when it all started sinking in for you, but it's certainly taken me, and I'm also 48, so it's taken me until the last couple of years where I've suddenly realized I'm comfortable with who I am. I know who I am. I know what matters and what's important to me. And having those things around allows me to make choices, which enables me to live life in a way I want to live it. And sometimes you don't realize. So when I think about, so I'm also a qualified coach. When I think about when I was growing up, I was always the person in school that people would come and talk to. People opened up to me. And it's all that stuff that later on you look back on it and you're like, oh, okay, that's why that was going on. It sounds like that was a similar thing for you in terms of that all slotting into place.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I was, yeah, the friend who's the listening ear and the sensible, wise one, the person who, yeah, you could turn to and kind of offload on, or just, yeah, ask for help. Or you knew that you were going to get a, you know, a sympathetic, compassionate, empathetic ear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. My mum once told me that I've been 40 since I was 12. So I feel like I'm getting younger now, which is good. You know, I've hit my peak of 40 and now I'm like really living it. It's great. So tell us a little bit more about the 1% Wellness Experiment. I mean, huge congratulations on the publication. And while we're recording this, it's about to come out in the US as well, right?
Yes. So it's coming out in the US and Canada on the 27th of February.
Congratulations.
I have to say I'm a little bit confused about when it's out in Australia and New Zealand. It might already be out in Australia, but not New Zealand. I'm not sure. I get a bit confused with dates.
People need but to anyways, follow you and enough. Go and look for the book and then grab it as soon as it comes out. But yeah, so tell us a little bit about how it came about, how that journey led to now being able to hold your book that you are the author of in your hands. How incredible is that?
If listeners can see the grin on my face, oh, honestly, I still just beam. Sometimes I still just pick up my book and I just hold it and I just stroke the cover because it's just the most enormous thrill. It came about kind of, from what you're saying, with the fact that so many books and, you know, and wellness gurus, in inverted commas, really kind of have the attitude of you just need to do these five things and your life will be grand. Your life will be super shiny and perfect, but you've got to follow it this way. You got to do these things in this way. And that's how it works.
Mm.
And I understand that, you know, there is a desire to have a very clear kind of path. If I follow this way, then everything will be great. But the trouble is there is no one clear path, which in one way is really frustrating. Like, you know, if there was a magic key, great. I just need the magic key. But actually, there is no magic key, which is good because it means that it hasn't kind of been withheld from you. It hasn't been lost somewhere. It's actually that it's entirely doable. It's within your own power. And what I have always kind of, what's always been my approach in all my courses and my coaching, and it's one reason why I'm a coach and not something else, is the fact that I want people to step into their own power, to do things their own way. Absolutely, we need help. We all need support. You know, we all need coaches. We all need somebody to help us figure this stuff out.
Sure.
But that it's about figuring out what is right for you. And so I talk a lot kind of about, you know, these are some ideas that I will lay out for you. You choose what you want to pick up. You don't, you know, I'm not handing something and sticking it in your hand and saying, you have to take this.
Yeah.
There's all these things. You know what? There's lots of stuff that you know, is research is backing it up. Lots of people say it works for them, but give it a go yourself. Doesn't mean that just because there's lots of research backing it up, lots of other people find it useful, doesn't mean that it's going to be the thing for you.
Exactly.
Or it's the thing for you in this specific way.
Yeah.
But why not give it a go? Why not try it? And also, you know, like, let's make it as doable as possible. Doable is a word I use a lot. Because it needs to be doable for you. And what's doable for you might be different to me, might be different to the next person.
Sure.
Some people, you know, they are able to have an hour to themselves first thing in the morning. Other people are not. Some people are able to have 2 hours, you know, of a weekend. Other people are not. It needs to work for you or else it's not going to happen. And so the whole idea of the 1% Wellness Experiment is that the 1% part relates to your time. So if you take off the recommended 8 hours of your day, you then have 1% of the 16 hours is technically 9.6 minutes, but I rounded it up to 10 minutes
because that's reasonable.
It's catchier. And as we've discovered, 10 minutes is a thing for me, apparently. So everything in the book, all the wellness ideas, only take 10 minutes. A lot of them take less than 10 minutes. You could choose to spend more than 10 minutes if you want to, but are absolutely doable in 10 minutes. And the experiment part of it is the idea that these are not tasks that you have to do. These are ideas for you to experiment with, to try out. So a lot of the experiments, I will say, you know, there's different ways to do this. You could do it this way, that way. You could do it this time of day. You could, you know, do it in this form. Why don't you have a go? See what you fancy. You know, they're organized so that there's 31 of them. So you could do one a day for a month if you like.
Amazing.
But you don't have to. You know, you can do them in order. You don't have to. You can pick and choose. You can say, actually, do you know what? I've always fancied trying that. I'll give that one a go first. Why not? Give it a go. You know, and if you try it and you think, actually, you know what? It kind of interests me. I feel like it could be useful, but I don't want to do it the way that I have suggested. Fine. Do it differently. Make it work for you. If you try it and actually you can just not get on board with the thing, it just does not speak to you. It doesn't feel good. Ditch it. Forget about it. Try something else. There are plenty of other ideas. It's about finding what is working for you.
Yeah, for sure. I love offering different options, because I know that I've tried things before and just they haven't worked for me, or I've not got on with them, or I'm not really that sort of person that gets a lot of thought or creativity from doing that or whatever. And yet there's other tools that are completely life-changing for me. You know, I do them and it really helps unlock something that I hadn't thought about. So the fact that it's almost like you give permission, in air quotes, for people to play with this a bit. You know, here's an idea, take it, make it your own, run with it, give it a go. And if you ditch it, that's fine. But it may just unlock a few things for you. And I think that's such a wonderful way to approach it. So giving people the opt-in, opt-out thing is really cool, I think.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, it's also, I do encourage, if there is something in there, say, for example, meditation, you know, if it's something where you think, oh, I've tried meditation, nope, didn't like it, don't do it. Or, you know, roll your eyes. Oh God, meditation, here we go. I lovingly invite you to maybe give it another shot.
Yeah.
It might be that actually it still isn't for you. Or it might be that giving it another go, approaching it in a different way, does work for you. If something, or if there's a resistance, like, oh, I don't need that. Let's maybe just check in for a second and just wonder, okay, why have you instantly dismissed that? Is it because you just assume that's not going to be helpful to you? Is it that somebody else said that they didn't like it? Is it that, you know, you kind of feel it's something you should do? What kind of makes you want to dismiss it?
Yeah.
If you still don't want to do the thing, don't do the thing. You know, I'm never going to tell anybody this is what you should do. Should is not a word in my vocabulary.
Nice.
But if it's something that you instantly dismiss, maybe just look at that in case it's not really got any founding, and maybe give it a go, because wouldn't it be a shame if it turned out to be something that you find really useful, but you dismissed because somebody else said that they didn't like it, or, you know, some other reason.
Yeah.
If you still don't want to do the thing, don't do the thing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And actually, it's quite incredible when you think about it. So 1% of your day, 10 minutes, just under 10 minutes, as we've discovered, it all comes back to small, tiny things that build up to make a big difference. So many of the listeners may have heard about, I can't remember his name now, Dave Brailsford, who was the coach for the GB cycling team, who were, I don't think it's an exaggeration, I don't think they'd hold it against me if I said, quite abysmal in terms of their performance. They weren't doing as well as he thought they could do. So he was a performance coach that was brought in, and he made 1% improvements, or his aim was to make 1% improvements in lots of little things. So the way they eat, what they wore, the tire pressure, the kind of practices they had, you know, all those things. He looked at everything and just made tiny, tiny tweaks. So those 1% gains were really, really important. What I love about your book is that people may have read that and thought, well, that's great, but they had things to improve, or it's very easy for them because that's about a specific goal or a specific target, but they doubt that that can apply in their own lives. I mean, we've talked a little bit about dipping in and out and choosing what works for you and how to apply that. I mean, what do people tell you about how they've benefited from doing these sort of little tweaks and little changes? Because I'm sure that some of your coaching clients and people who've been through your courses, as well as your readers, will have fed back on some of the differences it's made for them.
Yeah, it is that kind of permission slip that you talk about. You know, it is sort of being given that idea of, okay, I don't actually have to spend an hour a day. I can just spend 10 minutes. One I'm allowed to, that is considered, you know, good enough in terms of doing a wellness thing. But also, that could actually be enough to make a difference. Really? Okay. And, you know, right. So, you know, this is the thing. If we think, well, I need to find an hour, that may never happen. I know that an awful lot of women I talk with, yeah, it is not going to happen. If you need to find a solid hour, that's not going to be found. But if you find 10 minutes a day, that feels a lot more doable. And if you do 10 minutes a day for a week, that's more than an hour that is added up.
Yeah.
But if you try to find an hour in a week, maybe that hour would never have been found.
Yeah.
And so it's making it doable. It's kind of, yeah, ripping up that sort of sheet that says, this is how you have to do it. This is how it needs to be done. And if you don't do it this way, you're not doing it properly. You're not committed enough. You're not trying hard enough. You know, you're getting it wrong, you're failing, all those things, which certainly the kind of people-pleasing perfectionist among us don't want to do. We don't want to not do it right. We don't want to get it wrong. We don't want to fail. We don't want to try and not succeed, because then, you know, we're rubbish and we're useless. And what is the point in the first place?
Yeah.
10 minutes just takes that pressure off. It just says, let's just try a little bit and see how we get on. And there's just no denying that it builds up. Like, the fact that 10 minutes every day for a week adds up to 70 minutes, more than an hour. How can that not make some kind of difference?
Yeah.
And if you don't kind of, you know, believe in the idea that it could make a difference, then either give it a go, you know, see if you can prove it wrong, or, you know, or don't, you know, say, well, you know what, I'm actually only going to do an hour and I'm going to commit to finding an hour. But if that isn't doable, let's make it doable. And yeah, I think that really the only way to truly know and believe is to try it yourself. And that's the thing that has, you know, come back to me from people who've read the book, people who've taken my courses, people who I've coached with, is that they've said, they've just kind of gone into going, all right, fine, we'll give it a go, we'll try it. And then they come back and go, well, lo and behold, that actually made a difference. That did work. And yeah, I could stick to it. And then that sense of achievement that you get from being able to stick to something, because you're only asking yourself 10 minutes. And then that proof that you get from having stuck to something, that's not just a sense of achievement, but also, look, I can show myself that I can make a commitment to myself and I can follow it through.
Yeah.
That builds your self-belief. It believes your self-confidence, because if you're forever trying to do something that is just not doable for you because you're trying to find an hour and you never do, then you just think, well, you know, that shows me I have no sticking power, I have no staying power, I can't do it, this is not for me, I'm not meant to do this thing. And that feels horrible. But actually, if you said, you know what, I'm just going to do 10 minutes. And even if 10 minutes is too much, 5 minutes. And I'm just going to do that. And then, you know, a few days in a row, yeah, look, I did it.
Yeah,
turns
exactly.
out, I can actually do it for myself. And the other thing is that, you know, part of the whole experiment idea, it's taking the pressure off the fact that you have to do it every single day.
Because it's an experiment. Yeah,
yeah,
sure.
You know, if you miss a day, not the end of the world. You haven't messed up. You haven't failed. So important to realize, if you miss a day because you said, you know what, I'm going to do an experiment a day, or I'm going to do this one experiment, I'm going to do it every day for a week. And you do it Monday and Tuesday, and Wednesday somehow you forget, or you just can't be bothered, or whatever reason. You have not failed. You've just missed a day. What matters next is what you do next. Is then on the Thursday you go, you know what, I'm going to have another go.
Yeah.
That thing I was doing, I'm going to do it again. That is what matters. And even if you don't do it Thursday, but Friday you decide to do it, that is what matters, because that is you saying again, I'm worth having another go at this. I'm worth taking those 10 minutes for myself. I'm worth doing something for me.
Yeah.
And that is what matters so much more than the days that you miss.
Oh my gosh, there's so much buzzing around my head. So one of the things is around women giving themselves permission. So I had a conversation once with Alistair Humphreys, who's the micro adventurer, explorer, amazing guy. And he was doing a series. He's written an incredible book called The Doorstep Mile, which I absolutely love and I recommend loads. And it's all about helping people step into adventure a bit more. You know, what happened to you as a kid? Why do we stop that playfulness? Why do we stop that adventuring, doing things differently? So it's all about that. And it's a brilliant, brilliant book. But I reached out to him and said, this is really interesting, but a lot of your newsletter, because he has a newsletter that goes with it, which is well worth a sign up. I was reading it thinking, well, that's all right for you. You're a man. And so I contacted him. And I said, it would be really good to have a conversation with you. And what we came up with was the idea that actually everyone has the same 24 hours in the day. And I don't buy the conversation where it says we all have the same 24 hours and actually we can all do it, because some of us have nannies, some of us don't have nannies, some of us have children, some of us don't have children, some of us jobs, some of us have three jobs. So I don't buy that I've got the same 24 hours as Beyonce in quite the same time she's got 24 hours. However, what I do think is that if we invite people to say, you've got 24 hours, you could take one for you. What Alistair and I agreed on was that actually men would take the first of the 24 hours and then do all the things. Women would try and do all the things, tick off the to-do list, and then reward themselves with that final hour, which never happens because you're always knackered and the to-do list is never finished. So actually, I can really see how, rather than things like the 5 a.m. miracle morning, or where if I did that, my youngest one, who was always a light sleeper, he'd be up at 4 if I was up at 5, there's guarantee of it. So that never really resonated for me. But the thought of actually take 10 minutes and try something really works for me. And that leads me on to another thing, which I think about is procrastination. So when I talk about procrastination, one of the tools that people use for that is do 5 minutes of something. Just say, if you're going for a run, just say you're going for a 5 minute run. That's 2.5 minutes out, 2.5 minutes back. That's doable. But by the time you've started the 5 minutes, actually, you think, well, I'm into it. So I'll just do a couple of more minutes. And that's the same thing with the 10%. I think the 10 minutes, 1% is sometimes I wonder whether people find that they begin a meditation practice, perhaps, and they do 5 minutes perhaps, to start with. And then after 2 or 3 months, they may notice what a big difference it makes, and it becomes something they do habitually. And I was wondering around your thoughts around habits and building habits based on 10-minute increments. And it sounds like that has happened in terms of your clients, you know, trying it, realizing it works. It sounds to me like it's a much more sustainable practice when you break it down into that 1% of your time. Is that something that you feel kind of underpins some of this as well?
Yeah, absolutely. It's sustainable, doable, making it part of ordinary life. I think if we have to do something that requires us to suddenly get up earlier or radically change our life, that, you know, in one respect that could be great because that's actually what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. But in a, you know, for a lot of people, it's just not going to happen. That's not doable. And so it's fitting it into your world. And the last experiment in the book is all about making it a habit. And so I talk about, so obviously there's BJ Fogg, who wrote about Tiny Habits, and there's James Clear's Atomic Habits books. And there's this lovely kind of habit sandwiching, where a really kind of good way to be able to fit a new habit that you want in. So it could be that, you know, that you do this with your 10 minutes to try and make your 10 minutes happen, whatever you decide to do in your 10 minutes, is to sandwich it in between other regular habits. So that's how I got my gratitude journaling habit really established, was that I decided I would write in it after I had put on my PJs and done my kind of washing and brushing in the bathroom. Mm-hmm. Before I lay down in bed. So I would sit in bed, but before I actually went horizontal, I would write in my gratitude journal, which lives on my bedside table.
Oh my gosh, that's
and
exactly
then, you know, and so I couldn't, so I wouldn't lie down before it. So, but it works, isn't it? Because those things are absolutely concrete. They will, you know, every single day without fail, I will come out of the bathroom and I will lie down in my bed. Therefore, in between those two things, that's where I can slot it in. And so, yeah, it's making it again doable.
Make it as easy for yourself as you can.
As easy as possible. Yeah, that's the thing. That, you know, and that's something that I'll quite often see in conversation with people when they'll say, you know, well, this is the thing I want to do. Okay, like, what? How can we make it easy?
Yeah.
How can we make this doable? What is, you know, and they're like, well, I suppose I could just and they say a really little version of it. I'm like, right, that's not a just, that's making it possible. Let's start with that. Yes, but I think I should, and doing it in a bigger way. Okay, maybe that will be something that you get to. But right now, does that feel achievable? Or is it the little just version that feels achievable? Well, I can do the little version. Right, great. Let's start there. Let's do that, because actually that can build. But talking about procrastination. Oh, my friend, procrastination. So as obviously, you know, procrastination is really kind of tied into perfectionism, mm-hmm. and wanting it to, you know, wanting it to do something well, to do something right, to not find it hard or uncomfortable, to, you know, to not think that maybe actually you can't do it properly, or to get it wrong, or to do it badly. I procrastinated so much in writing the book because I cared so much about it and I wanted to do such a good job.
Yeah.
And there was this feeling within me every time I sat down to write it where I just thought, what if I can't get it out of my head and into the page? You know, what if I, so every time that, you know, what you said about just do it 5 minutes, I was like, I will write for half an hour. I will write for half an hour. We'll see how we get on. I'll just do it. That's all I have to do. 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 Then sit down and lo and behold, la 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 la. Oh, look, I've written an entire chapter. Oh, look, I feel like going, I want to do the next one. And then voila, I've written two experiments.
Yeah.
But it was just saying to myself, just come on, you can just write for half an hour. Just write for half an hour. Get it down. It doesn't matter if it's a mess. You can edit it later. You know, you can figure it out. Just get something down on the page. And when you've done that, you'll be dead chuffed with yourself that you sat down and you did it. And every time it worked, every time.
And that's the other thing about doing things as well, is sometimes we wait for inspiration to hit, but actually CBT techniques, cognitive behavioral therapy, will tell us actually that action comes from action. It's that motivation comes from action. So if we wait to be inspired to do something, we may never do it. If we just do it for 5 minutes, it's the feeling we get after that 5 minutes that then inspires us to do it again next time. And that's absolutely the same, I guess, with those 10 minutes. You know, you do it for 10 minutes and next time you'll think, oh, okay, that I did that. That was really good and it was okay. And that habit sandwiching is really funny. So I do exactly the same as you with my gratitude journal. And there are times when I think I'm too tired, I can't be bothered, I'll just think them in my head. But as soon as my bum hits the bed, it's like, okay. And you automatically reach for it because that becomes then a habit. And when I first started, I used to keep it on my pillow because then I couldn't get into bed without picking it up. So now it lives on my bedside table because it's become a routine and a habit that I love. But when I was first starting, a way to make it easy for myself was to put it on the pillow so I couldn't avoid it. But yeah, it's funny, isn't it, how quickly things do become habitual and the difference they make as well. Finding that. This is incredible, I think.
Yeah. And we can, you know, we can do these things. I love the fact that you put it on your pillow. That is a genius, genius trick. You know, we can do these things while we're doing other things. If it feels like I can't find 10 minutes to just, or I just don't feel like I'm allowed, it would be selfish. It's wrong for me to just do something for me 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, while you're waiting for the pasta to cook, while you're waiting for the tea to brew, you know, while you're doing, you know, while something else is happening and you're kind of waiting for it, you should use that as your 10 minutes. Use that there, because, you know, and you know, everything that we're talking about here is kind of, you know, to do with sort of mental, emotional well-being. But also you can use this for other stuff. So if there are, you know, if there are physical things you want to do, say you really want to kind of work on your strength. I'm trying to work on my strength at the moment. Mm-hmm. I am not going to go to the gym. It's not going to happen. But what I can do is, while I'm waiting for the kettle to boil, I can do squats. So that's what I do. No. You know, it doesn't even take 10 minutes, but it's something that just, you know, gets me doing the thing that is beneficial for me that I want to do. But if I say to myself, I am now going to, you know, go and exercise, oh my God, that just makes my heart sink. I don't want to do it. But I'm just sort of waiting for the kettle to boil. And yes, I could be on my phone scrolling, you know, there are other things I could do, or I could do some squats. So, you know, there's all kinds of areas of our life that we can apply this sort of 1% thinking to.
Yeah, totally. Totally. I have decided this year that I'm going to introduce, there's all sorts of little things I want to change or build into the way I approach and live life. Tiny things or bigger things. So for those people who listen regularly, they'll know that I was a runner for a long time. I wrote an article actually on my Substack around this, that I, before lockdown, I was 6 days away from doing an ultra marathon. By the time we came out of lockdown, I could barely run 5K. I was, you know, just because of homeschooling and full-time job and Quiet the Hive on the side and all of that. And I've struggled to get my running back up. And so this year I decided, well, I'm just going to do Couch to 5K again. I'm going to go back to a complete beginner mindset. But what really changed for me about it was I didn't have to think, oh God, now I have to go out and run and I have to run for at least 30 minutes. It was, oh, I get to go out for a walk and I only have to run for a minute in doing that. This is great. So I can run for a minute and then I walk for three and then I run for another and I know I can do that and that's all good and really lovely. And now during January, that's what I focused on. So now that feels like it's become a bit more of a habit. In February, I used to have a really good meditation, daily meditation practice that's slipped. So in February, what I've said, what I'm going to focus on is just doing one 10-minute meditation a day. And sometimes I get into bed and I think, drat, I haven't done it. So I do the sleep meditation. And, you know, and I've decided that every month I'm just going to do a little thing. One of my things is going to be squats and lunges while I brush my teeth. So normally when I brush my teeth, I think I need to do this. I need to do this. I should be doing this. I could put this away. No, while you're brushing your teeth, just do those squats or whatever. So I love the kettle is a really good reason as well, because many of us have three or four cups of tea or coffee or whatever during the day. So to do a squat every time or whatever is just brilliant.
When I'm brushing my teeth, I stand on one foot.
Balance, yeah.
For balance. And then my toothbrush buzzes when it says, like, you then have to do the other set of teeth.
Yeah.
And so then I swap feet and stand on the other one. But yeah. What I noticed that you said there was that you, instead of thinking, oh, I have to go for a 30-minute run, you thought, I get to go for a walk and I can run. And it's your language matters so much. You know, oh, God, I have to do this, or I really should, or I ought to.
Yeah.
Feels heavy, feels, you know, there's no choice, there's obligation, it's no fun. But actually, oh, you know, I get to do this, or I could do this.
Yeah.
It lightens everything up. Suddenly there's choice. Well, do I want to go out into the world and do some form of exercise, whether it be running or walking? Yeah, I do. Okay, well then that's what I'm going to do. You know, and rather than, oh, well, I have to because I really ought to, and I should.
Yeah, exactly.
Just, it shifts your mindset about it completely, just for those words.
Mm. We had a conversation at breakfast this morning saying, I've got two boys, and the eldest does not like Friday. It's his toughest schedule of school, so he doesn't like Friday. And so we had exactly this conversation this morning. He's like, oh, it's Friday and I've got to go to school. I said, or you could say I get to go to school and hang out with my friends, which makes my worst day a bit better. And he's like, oh, I think they hate that I tried this all this stuff on them. But it does work. It does shift it for sure. Definitely. So, Gabrielle, for someone who's listening to this and thinking, A, I am loving this idea and this is brilliant and I really want to give it a go. And B, where do I get the book, which we will come to shortly. But where would be a good place to start? What would you recommend for someone who's thinking, I'm really loving some of these ideas that are coming up. I'm loving this 1% wellness experiment. What would you suggest that they started with?
I think a good place to start is, what interests you? What have you thought to yourself, do you know, I've always fancied, well, I've heard about this idea and that sounds really interesting. Go that route first of all, as opposed to the, oh, well, apparently this is really good and I should have a go with it. And somebody else says that this worked for them, but I'm not sure, but I probably should try. Again, it's the should word, the evil should word.
Should be banned.
You know, if it interests you, if you're curious about it, follow that curiosity, because you're much more likely to, one, do the thing in the first place and to stick to the thing if it's something that interests you and you're choosing to do it and that you enjoy. And if you think, oh, well, I'm not sure if that counts, never mind. Who is counting? Mm-hmm. Who decides what counts, what doesn't count? Mm-hmm. If you feel that it's going to be of benefit to you in whatever you want to feel benefit in, whether that is your physical health or your emotional or mental or spiritual health, if you feel that that is just something that is going to be of use to you, you go for it. You give it a go. And, you know, if you think, actually, do you know what, 10 minutes? I want more than 10 minutes. I want a half an hour, God damn it, for myself. Go for it. You have half an hour. If you think, I can 5 minutes, that's all I could possibly do. Fine, 5 minutes. It's thinking, you know, what is it that is going to work for you? Not what somebody else says, including me, not what other people tell you it needs to look like. What do you want it to look like? And if actually it can feel too daunting to have too much choice of, well, I need some parameters, I need somebody to give me some guidance here, then, you know, obviously there's the book, there's, you know, there's your amazing resources and website. There's plenty of places that you can go for ideas, but go with what feels interesting to you. What do you feel pulled to try, as opposed to, well, this is what is apparently good for me, therefore I, you know, I better give that a go.
Yeah.
Follow your, that's going to lead you to something that is going to feel more interesting for you to do and more likely for you to do it. That is the place I would start with.
That is such good advice. Go with the curiosity, the energy, whatever interests you. I think that's brilliant. Now, talking of advice, Gabrielle, we've come to the final question, which I ask all of my guests, and I'm really intrigued to hear what yours would be. So tell me, Gabrielle Trainer, what advice would you give your 21-year-old self?
Such a good question. I'm really glad that you gave me some warning of this one.
Yeah, I do try and let people know.
I was like, oh my. So 21, I'd finished university. I was attempting to find a job in my first career and find my way in the world. Really discombobulating time of life, I think. I think I would say to myself that trust that things will figure out, that, you know, you don't need to have it all figured out now, but that things will figure out in time, which will probably be really frustrating to a 21-year-old me. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, there are just things that you cannot know yet. There are, you know, the career that I'm doing now, I did not know existed. And the way of being able to do it online was not a thing when I was 21.
No, for sure.
That was just that, you know, the internet was in its absolute infancy. We had no idea that what the world would be like in the 27 years time. I would also tell myself that the qualities about me that I think are kind of negatives that hold me back, that make me not as good as other people, the sensitivity, the introversion. I would tell myself about introversion and say, as soon as Susan Cain publishes a book, go read it. My empathy, all those aspects of me, you know, the fact that I like quiet and I need, you know, space and time on my own, all those things don't make me lesser. They don't make me not good enough. They don't make me anything other than the wonder that is me, as I, you know, as all human beings are. And that actually one day I will start to realize that those things are kind of my superpowers, and that I will make an entire life and career out of using those qualities to help other people. And I think if I had told my younger self that, I probably wouldn't have believed it, but also hopefully it would have just planted something in my brain that would have said, oh, maybe I don't need to wait until I'm in my mid-30s to start to like and accept myself. Oh, that's what I would hope at any rate for my 21-year-old me.
I love that. My cheeks hurt from grinning so much listening to that. That's so beautiful. That thing about the things you think are your flaws are actually your superpowers is just so important and so special for people to don't just listen to it, but actually hear that, because there will be a lot of people who haven't reached that reckoning yet, haven't got that realization. And it's such a beautiful way to put it. Thank you so much for sharing that, Gabrielle. So tell me, how can people find you? Where do they find out more? Where do they get those amazing freebies from on your website? How do they buy the book?
Well, my website is gabrielletrainer.com, but because that's not particularly easy to spell, you can also go to thewellnessexperiment.co.uk. That will take you to the book page, where then you can find the rest of my website. The book is available in all good places that sell books, be it online or you can order from your bookshop. You can hear Pressing Pause podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and all the usual places. And I'm on Instagram, Gabrielle Trainer, and I'm on Substack. This is where I always forget something important, but I think that's everything. Like, that's everywhere you can find me.
And we will stick them all in the show notes. So if you are reading this, don't worry. I'm going to put the link to Quiet by Susan Cain as well, which Gabrielle has mentioned a few times. But all those links on how to connect with Gabrielle and find out more about the 1% Wellness Experiment will be in the show notes. Gabrielle, I am so grateful for your time. It's been just wonderful. Every so often I record a podcast and I just think, this is amazing. And this is definitely one of those. So thank you so much for your time and generosity. And I wish you every success, because this book deserves to absolutely fly. I think it could really be pivotal. Oh my God. So many people. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jane. I've just loved having this conversation with you, and I really appreciate you inviting me on. Thank you.
Amazing. So there we have it, a conversation that could lead to tiny changes that could really mix things up for you, that could really make a difference. That story about Dave Brailsford, the performance coach for the GB cycling team, is really something, because they went on to be an incredible team, winning all sorts of awards, including gold at the Olympics. So it just goes to show that tiny incremental changes can lead to something massive and more substantial. I adored that conversation with Gabrielle, and I hope you did too. Please do go and check out her book and her website, follow her over on Substack, and let her know what the changes are that you are trying out as part of the 1% wellness experiment. Until next time, I will see you very soon. Take good care. If you enjoyed this podcast from Inside the Hive by Quiet the Hive, then please leave us a 5-star rating or drop us any comments in the box below. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Any comments or ratings you give us all help other people who would benefit from the content to find us. Thanks so much.